You are listening to Particular Pilgrims, Stories from Reformed Baptist History with Commentary. I'm your host, Ron Miller, pastor of Covenant Baptist Church of Clarksville, Tennessee, and a longtime student and collector of Particular Baptist History. We are on the Man of God Network, brought to you by Covenant Baptist Theological Seminary. In our last episode, I described the nonconformists' civil disadvantages under toleration that made them English second-class citizens. How did they respond? And specifically, how did the London Particular Baptist pastors attempt to display a proper patriotism and submission to their God-appointed leaders while still appealing for their full civil rights? One of the ways they attempted to show their sincere loyalty to their country was by preaching sermons to commemorate important events. This might be the accession to the throne by a new king or queen, or perhaps a military victory or loss. But especially, they came at the death of a monarch. A common theme was that they were a part of a Protestant nation standing against papal civil tyranny. The monarch led their religion, and at this level, Particular Baptists felt a great commonality with other Protestant and Reformed churches, as they called them and themselves. And so they openly declared their support for their nation in sermon. There are many extant Baptist sermons from the 1700s that do this. I recently obtained one by John Pigott, the pastor of Little Wild Street, London, until 1712, and a prominent nonconformist figure. The sermon is entitled, "The Natural Frailty of Princes Considered," a sermon preached the 29th of March, 1702, upon the sad occasion of the death of the late high and mighty prince, William III, King of England. It was printed by Henry Hills, the son of the printer of the same name, whom we learned about in episode 57. The final line on that title page says, "For the benefit of the poor." This may have been at the request of John Pigott as a way to generate money to give to the poor in remembrance of the king. But since Hills was known to be a notorious pirate of other men's printings, I can't help but wonder if something more to his personal advantage is actually going on. I want to quickly summarize the sermon to show how this particular Baptist pastor viewed his king and country among the political and religious threats of the day, and to see his overriding concern about spiritual realities. The sermon text is Psalm 146, verses 3 and 4. "Put not your trust in princes, nor in the Son of Man, in whom there is no help. His breath goeth forth, he returneth to his earth, in that very day his thoughts perish." Pigott begins by declaring that all who descend from Adam, however distinguished, are not exempt from the stroke of death. Death is a monarch, he says, that not only empties cottages, but unthrones princes. Then he expounds the two verses in this outline, advice against trusting in princes, and then he gives two reasons for it. The first is their natural frailty, and the second is that their thoughts immediately perish. These are explained well and with a proper balance of both submission to the king and not submitting when his law is against the word of God. Then he reminds his hearers of their nation's recent history and the blessings that came with William's ascension to the throne in 1688. But now he has died. So Pigott recounts events in William's life that present him as the man who relieved what Pigott calls the Reformed churches from the, quote, "flattering promises of a popish prince and our enemies." Pigott praises him as that, quote, "prince that delivered us from popery and arbitrary power." He thanks God for William's earnest support for the succession to the crown in the Protestant line, and he lauds his personal heroism and victories in battle. he's also pictured as one who, quote, loved his people and had a deep concern for their happiness. Well, obviously, Pigott eulogizes the dead king with high praise and in the context of Protestant state religion. Like any good Baptist preacher, he ends his sermon with numerous uses. He reminds his hearers to not murmur at God's providence. Next, he tells them to stand in awe of the God who holds the keys to death and hell. Third, he urges them to mourn their loss by mourning the sins that occasioned it. Fourth, he presses them to, quote, endeavor after a firm union among Protestants, calling it, quote, a wall of defense. He recommends the late king's own words that there should be no distinctions among them, except as Protestants against a popish prince. Fifth, he reminds them to expect their own death and prepare for it. And sixth, he urges them to trust in the only prince who has immortality, Jesus Christ. And then he closes by thanking God for Anne, whom he labels the Protestant queen. So among the rising high Anglican pressure to eliminate nonconformity, Pigott clearly waves the flag of patriotism for country and support for the Protestant succession. But this sermonizing was joined to organizing. The particular Baptist pastors, including Pigott, also gathered together with other dissenting ministers and formed what is called the Committee of Three Denominations in order to protect their civil rights. While they couldn't in conscience worship together, the particular Baptists, Congregationalists, and Presbyterians all had common concerns and mutual interests. This committee had 10 members, three of whom were Baptists, namely Joseph Stennett, Nathaniel Hodges, and our John Pigott. This was an organization that supported the dissenting cause by way of political lobbying on a national level. Their first work consisted in presenting an address to the new monarch, Queen Anne, expressing loyalty to her person and government. This was on March 18, 1702, a few days after William's death and 11 days before Pigott would preach his sermon. Another, quote, loyal address was presented to the Queen in 1706 on the occasion of a military victory in Holland over the French. In it, the dissenters promised to promote that union and moderation highly necessary to the common safety. Do you hear their polite congratulations mixed with a plea for their own preservation? After Sacheverell's infamous sermon and trial in 1710 that we spoke of last time, hostility against the dissenters increased. And following new elections, many of the nonconformists' political friends lost their office. This led to the passing of the Occasional Conformity Bill in 1711. This affirmed that unless a person conformed to the Church of England, they could not hold civil or military office. Anyone in office that worshipped with dissenters would be fined £40 and dismissed from office. Occasional conformity was the practice of taking communion once a year in order to legally hold office. Now, Baptists didn't approve of this practice, of course. They were committed separatists. Joseph Stennett, one of the Baptist members of the committee I just named, wrote against the practice, another public statement by a particular Baptist pastor. These public declarations were carefully written, mild, and presented by someone with standing and friends in high places. The Stennets, from one generation to the next, often filled this role. But the danger inherent in 1713's Schism Bill drew out a strong reply. Now, the Schism Bill disallowed anyone from keeping or teaching in a school unless they conformed to the established church. So the goal was to destroy dissent by eliminating their ability to train their children or educate ministers. The Committee of Three denominations sprang into action. They lobbied members of Parliament and printed objections to the bill. So concerning was this that their response was what one historian has described as, quote, blunt and intense. They appealed to the Queen for help. She did not listen. She signed the bill, however, in a providence that elicited much praise from Baptists, and died the next year, so the bill could not practically be enforced. Apparently, she died the very night before it was to go into effect. Although the committee was reestablished in 1714, it was without John Pigott. He had died the previous year, but his labors had been effective in helping to maintain the dissenting interests. The committee continued on with much favor under King George I and eventually became what is called the Protestant Dissenting Deputies about the year 1730. They worked to protect the civil rights of dissenters throughout the nation for the next two centuries. At first, they consisted of pastors from the three denominations, but later came to be led by dissenting lawyers and public figures. Well, this is one part of the joined civil religious history of the particular Baptists and their pastors in the early 1700s. Thank you for listening today. This is Ron the Baptist wishing you grace and peace.